I call this Committee of Economic Development to order. Good morning, everyone. Happy Ash Wednesday for those of you who celebrate. Happy Valentine's Day. Happy first day of committee. Welcome back. First thing we need to do is we have a new member. We need to welcome our new member. Rep. Liz Ryer, do you want to introduce yourself quickly?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Liz Ryer from 52A, Egan and Burnsville. Happy to be here joining the committee this year. A great partnership with my assignments to workforce development and capital investment. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. I want to take this moment to thank Rep. Richardson, Ruth Richardson, for her service and her commitment to equity and inclusion. Wherever she is, I'm sure she's not missing us, but we miss her. We also have new staff members. First, I want to give a moment for our new Republican research staff to introduce themselves.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Ryan Wiskirchen. I am the House GOP researcher for this committee. This is my second year as a researcher. I also do pensions and state government. So I'm imagining this will be a little livelier than pensions usually is. So thank you for having me.
Thank you and welcome. We also have a new committee page. Do you want to say your name quickly?
Natalie, for everybody that can hear me.
Thank you and welcome to this committee. We also have a new House research. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Justin Cope, legislative analyst, House Research Department. I'll be staffing this committee this year, so looking forward to working with you all.
Thank you and welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome, everybody. We have two sets of minutes that we need to pass or to adapt. Okay. All right. I can't find my words. The first one is the minutes from February 7 joint hearing with in North Mankato with the workforce development. Jer Zhang, would you like to move the minutes?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Any discussion? None? All right. All in favor. Okay, you guys are going to have to give me a minute to catch up. All in favor of adopting the minutes from February 7, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Meetings are February 7 are adopted. The next one is meeting from our last hearing on last year on March 24. Lead Kosnick, do you move the minutes of March 24?
Madam Chair, I move the minutes of March 24th.
Thank you, Lead Kosnick. Any discussion on the minutes? All those in favor of adopting the minutes from March 24, 2023, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Meeting of March 24 is adopted. All right. Considering today is our first day back, we will start welcoming the new deed commissioner. He's not super new, but he has been, he has joined us in mid-session or maybe the end of session. He would have to tell us that. Commissioner Matt Falrick, welcome to the committee. He will introduce himself, and then we will have the deed staff. Well, Deputy Commissioner is also here. Welcome back. Just walk us through a presentation. Welcome, Mr. Commissioner. Please introduce yourself and share whatever it is that you want to share with us. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Matt Verlich, and I serve as Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and I'm happy to be with all of you today and happy to be accompanied by a couple of my colleagues. It is an honor to be with you on Valentine's Day and Ash Wednesday. And also to be back at this committee after having visited you and testified last year in my previous capacity, and I'll talk a little bit about that. But we're excited to be here as you kick off this session and the work of the committee to give you an overview of the work of the department with a special emphasis on things that have happened since the end of the last historic legislative session. And in fact, that does coincide with the time that I arrived at the agency, as we'll talk about in more detail. So I'll give you a little bit of background on me and then how the agency is delivering for all of Minnesota and with an emphasis on businesses, workers, and communities. So one of the things that's new at the Department of Employment and Economic Development is me. And since I'm here, I wanted to take the opportunity to give a little bit of background about me. But before I do, also would note that I'm seated next to Deputy Commissioner McKinnon, who, as you know, served as the temporary commissioner during the time after my predecessor, Steve Grove, made his move and obviously led the agency through a very busy time, a very busy session, and did so ever so well. And I'm delighted to get to work with him now, so wanted to express my appreciation to Kevin. So it was June 20th that I started in this role as an appointee of the governor, and it's been completely an honor and a pleasure to be in the job now 7.5 months or so. Previous to coming into this job, and in fact the capacity that brought me here to this committee before, was as president of the Initiative Foundation based in Little Falls, Central Minnesota, and I see some Central Minnesota friends here. You probably are familiar with the network of 6 Minnesota Initiative Foundations that each have their own respective service territory. In the case of the organization that I led, it's the 14 counties and 2 Native Nations of Central Minnesota, and together those organizations cover all of the 80 counties of Greater Minnesota, with things like small business lending as a community development financial institution in the case of Initiative Foundation, with training and technical assistance for entrepreneurs, with child care work, workforce development, grants to nonprofits, et cetera. And in many cases, the work that those organizations do are using state funds in partnership with DEED and other state agencies. And so that familiarity that I had with the agency through collaboration with partners at DEED was part of why I felt like this would be a sensible transition, and was honored when it all came together. You can see the next bullet is that before I joined the Initiative Foundation, I had a couple of roles at the U.S. Small Business Administration, because small business issues are a passion of mine. So I had a role for a couple of years in Denver as regional administrator, and then I served as chief operating officer for the SBA for the last couple of years of the Obama administration. And then, since we're talking about jobs and a lot of business work too, something that I think didn't mention in the previous committee, the Workforce Committee, and by the way, my apologies to those of you that heard some of this once already this morning. We'll try to mix it up with a few new things. One is that I also spent 5 years working for an energy commodities brokerage, so some private sector experience where I got to see markets being created in real time, which I think is relevant to the work of our department. In the time since I joined the agency, I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the areas of focus we've had so far. As you can see, that first bullet under early areas of focus is to note that remote meetings, meetings by Zoom and Teams and so forth, are valuable, and they certainly have their benefits in terms of efficiency, but there is no substitute for in-person meetings. And so I spent a lot of time traveling all over Minnesota to get to know both the good that the agency has already done in partnership with lots of entities around the state, but also to learn what things we can be doing better and where some emerging areas of need are, et cetera. So as you can see in the slide, if hopefully that's visible to you, have been to places like DigiKey and Thief River Falls, Polar Semiconductor, ST Paper, Microbiologics in my home market of St. Cloud. I live just north of St. Cloud in rural Benton County. Cirrus, Boom Chicka Pop, lots of chambers, development corporations, workforce development boards, trade associations, and nonprofit grantees. And then I would add, too, in addition to all that Minnesota travel, I was honored to be able to accompany the governor on 2 trade missions, one to Japan, as well as to Australia, where we helped to advance the mission of the Minnesota Trade Office, which is one of the really exciting and cool parts of DEED, whose mission is to help promote exports from Minnesota to the world, as well as promote foreign direct investment into Minnesota from elsewhere. And the last bullet refers to what has been one of my priorities, and the fact that when you're new in leading a team or an organization, people will often ask you, what is your unique vision for the organization? What's going to be your special initiative? How will you put your thumbprint or fingerprint on things? And, you know, I have mostly punted that question and said, coming out of the historic legislative session that you all finished last year, in which you allocated an unprecedented scale of resources to this department and gave us some heavy responsibilities that we're excited to deliver on. That is more than keeping us busy. And so my number one priority in the role has been, as you can see, effective implementation of the programs funded in the last session. And if I can look back on my tenure and say that we delivered those programs well, we squeezed every bit of value out of the precious and scarce taxpayer resources you entrusted us with, that will be a success, in my view. So before we get into a detailed discussion about some of the individual programs that I know you're interested in, I wanted to give a couple slides with some context on the economic environment that we're operating in. And I would also note that much of DEED's work, of course, is about trying to shape the Minnesota economy in a positive way, working with lots of partners to do that. But in addition to shaping things, we also report on the economy. And on a monthly basis, for example, we get to release the new unemployment figures, the new jobs figures, et cetera. And so in that vein, I wanted to just give you a little bit of a status report on where we are. And at the top, you can see what is a good news development when it comes to the population of Minnesota. And of course, this is important for a whole bunch of reasons, but including workforce development and the ability of our employers to find the people they need. There was some concern when the census figures leading up to, I think, July of 2022 showed a small decline in the Minnesota population. And the good news is that when the most recent figures came out for the next year, that is the year ending in the middle of 2023, you can see that our Minnesota population grew by 0.4%. I think that's on the order of 27,000 Minnesotans or so. And in terms of a rank, that puts us 25th, so kind of right in the middle of the pack, which is good news for us that we are growing again, and we'll hope to see that continue and accelerate into the future. When it comes to quality of life and the fact that this is a great place to live and work, we look at a variety of rankings, including you can see the overall mood in this state is good, and I hope that's true in the committee as well, since I'm here testifying to you. You can see we're the fourth happiest state in the nation, according to WalletHub, and I've heard the governor talk about the idea that one of the states that sometimes beats us on this rank is Hawaii, but if you consider that we have a bit of a weather disadvantage relative to Hawaii, I think we can take a lot of pride in that ranking. Our poverty levels are low relative to other places. Our education levels are high relative to other places, and those are things to be proud of. We have a high median household income at $82,338. But lest you think that I'm only here to tell you about the positive news, there are challenges, and we certainly want to face those and work on them, and we are, including the fact that our labor force has not recovered to pre-pandemic levels. Jobs have recovered to pre-pandemic levels, but the labor force has not. And so that's something we want to work on, as you can see in the last bullet. If we dig a little bit more deeply into economic indicators specifically, you know, this is what we talk about in those monthly press conferences where we release the economic figures, including job growth. And you can see that we haven't had just 1 month of job growth or two in a row. We've had six straight months of job growth. And it's important to note as well, when we talk about job growth, it's not just positions being created, but rather this measures people gaining employment into those positions. And so businesses and other employers are finding people. It's not as easy as they would like, and certainly we want to drive more success there, but they are having some success in bringing in new people. And you can see the total number of jobs in Minnesota is the highest it's ever been at over 3 million. The unemployment rate, as we've known for quite a long time now, is low, and specifically 2.9%, the most recent time we reported on it. That continues to be somewhat below the U.S. average. So this is a source of pride in the sense that the economy is strong. And, I mean, I was at the Minnesota Chamber Priorities Dinner two nights ago, and someone said from the stage, almost every employer in this room is hiring, I'm guessing. And that's a great situation to be in, but it also means workforce challenges. And if anyone thought that we could address the workforce challenge merely by increasing the labor force participation rate, we do need to acknowledge that we are already very strong on that front, and we exceed the national average of 62.5% with our 68.1%. And so we want to make further progress on that front, but we're already, you know, well beyond where other states are, meaning it won't necessarily be easy. And hence, you can see labor force is still the biggest issue facing our state and the economy. And then if we get into the state of business in Minnesota, we were excited back in July when CNBC did its ranking of the business environment in all 50 states, and we touted the fact that Minnesota came in not just in the top half, not just in the top 10, but the fifth best state for business. And with all respect to any people who have Texas ties, we took pride in bumping Texas out of the top five. You can see we're home to lots of Fortune 500 companies, and we have a very dynamic small business environment, and so that adds up to a great and dynamic business environment overall. If you look on the right-hand side, the image is from an Axios article that shows the change in new business applications, and Viking Purple is good. Well, you can see that the upper Midwest, including Minnesota, is a hotbed for new business applications. And that's often seen as kind of a leading indicator or a measure of economic sentiment. Do people feel confident enough to start businesses? Well, in our neck of the woods, they do. And we will, of course, want to drive more success. And if you start a small business or a business of any kind in Minnesota, the chances are that it will persist to a greater degree than in other places, because you can see that we rank number one in the country in five-year business survival rate at 57.6%. Businesses continue to expand here. I know there were concerns after the last session about what would some of the measures passed do to the business environment. Some made predictions that it would be harmful, but in fact, we see continued very strong indicators across a variety of measures, but including in large-scale business investment. And Deputy Commissioner McKinnon is in close touch with lots of the individual companies that are making those very large investments that last year added up to $7.6 billion. And our job is to work with lots of partners to try to keep that positive momentum going. And with that, we will then transition into how we are doing it. And specifically, that is by implementing the programs you've entrusted us to do. And the rest of the legislature allocated $1.8 billion, which, of course, is a level that is in excess of what we've had in the past following a historic session in 2023. We are focused on implementation, as I mentioned already, and that is how DEED delivers, which, of course, is our tagline as we attempt to deliver for businesses, workers, and communities. With that, I could pause, and I was going to transition to the Deputy Commissioner, but happy to engage questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. I think we have a couple of questions, but before we go to the question, I just want to highlight all the stuff that you shared is wonderful news, but what I would have loved to see in that slide is also the disparities. Yes, Minnesota is a wonderful place to live, but there's also another story that is parallel to that, that reality that, you know, BIPOC Minnesotans are not doing as great as white Minnesotans, that the disparity, whether it's median income, whether it's, you know, business ownership, whether it is workforce, the challenges are not, you know, one size fits all for all, and it's not, and the success stories are not all, you know, the same. So I would have loved to see, while Minnesota is doing great and the median income is, you said 82,000, I believe?
Yeah,
but I would have loved to see what the median income is for the Latino community, for the black community, and for our, you know, indigenous community, so then that we have a real picture of what's actually going on. So hopefully we'll see that in the future. But I'm going to transition to question. Lead Kasnick, you have a question for the commissioner? Well,
thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for being here, Commissioner, and congratulations on the new post and being at this committee for the first time. Madam Chair, your comments, I think members on this side of the aisle share some concerns with that. We understand that making sure that all Minnesotans have a ability to participate and make their lives better. Sometimes we'll disagree on the policy to get there, but I think we recognize your concern too, so thank you for pointing that out. Commissioner, I had a question in reference to labor, and I know this isn't the Labor Committee, but if you could touch on, we have a lot of policy direction activists and stakeholders coming to us saying there's short labor. They want the state to help increase pay and retention, the pensions area and retirement benefits. What is your thoughts on that? I guess I would be concerned that when the state gets too involved, we're manipulating the market and actually creating more kind of inflation and competition where everybody's, we're just creating more pay is great for people. I'm concerned about manipulating the market, but the bottom line is we have a shortage of workers and just paying the current workers more. How does I'm concerned that that doesn't really solve the worker shortage issue, and there's probably other things that the free market and employers and business managers can figure out to attract their employers, but just competing on higher hourly wages and retirement benefits, whether it's police officers, teachers, manufacturing, all across the board. Every industry needs employees. But when we start to manipulate that, I'm not sure we're solving the problem. What are your thoughts?
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Go ahead. Thank you, Mr.
Lee. Madam Chair.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you for the comment and the question. We, of course, want Minnesotans to be able to afford the expenses in their daily lives. And so wages are something that we watch carefully, because as much as there is true economic strength across the country and especially in Minnesota right now, if you look at consumer confidence or some other measures of how people are feeling about that very strong economy, there has been a lag in terms of public opinion not quite aligning with the economic strength that we see at a macro level. And that's partly because there have been difficulties in affording expenses, things like childcare, things like utility costs, rent, et cetera. Now, fortunately, that has improved quite a lot in recent times, and I feel like that is a lot of what motivated some of the moves that were made in the last legislative session to help people afford things. At DEED, we work on the childcare issue, and employers, of course, need to do what they can to maybe change how they recruit, change how they retain employees, probably have to always be looking at wages that they offer so that they are competitive. And then at the state level, what are we doing to make this a great place to raise a family and a great place for workers? Well, I think when you have parents with children and they see that we feed all our kids breakfast and lunch, that makes Minnesota an attractive place. When you see that lower income people can go to school, to higher ed, with no cost through the North Star Promise, that makes us an attractive place. And then at DEED, with our paid leave program, we are very excited about the fact that we're going to be, I think, the 15th state to have this, and it will mean that Minnesotans won't need to face the very difficult decision of either financial security or caring for themselves or a loved one. We think as the story of some of those measures gets told, this becomes an even more attractive place to work and to raise a family. That's why we're also happy to see the increase in population. And then at our sister agency of Explore Minnesota, they, of course, have an allocation as well to do Explore Minnesota for Business and Talent, which will help to tell the Minnesota story in other places, since we know that not everyone has time to study everything that I say or you say in committee hearings.
Well, thank you for those comments.
Oh, we'll leave it thank at that. You, Mr. Appreciate Commissioner. It. Do you have a follow-up, you said?
No, we'll debate later.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Oh, Rep. Schumacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, the slide about the state of business in Minnesota, the CNBC ranking, I see these rankings all over the place all the time, and I know they all use different formulas. Could you just remind me and the rest of the committee what criteria CNBC uses on this?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't have it in front of me, but I think for folks that look at that and say, this seems different from maybe what we see in other rankings, yeah, much does depend on the methodology. And I would say, I think in the CNBC case, they take kind of a broad interpretation of things like tax and regulation and permitting, which I know we certainly should talk about, but also educational attainment, infrastructure, broadband is something that we work on directly at DEED. And so if you take that broad picture of quality of life in a place, and does that make it attractive to find those workers you need to start a business, and then you look at the fact that we have that number one ranking for 5-year survivability, those are all, you know, positive indicators of the strength of the economy here.
Do you have a follow-up? No. Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Are there any other questions? All right. We're going to transition to the next part of your presentation. Go ahead.
Thank you. And with that, I would, Madam Chair, I would invite my colleague, Deputy Commissioner McKinnon.
Welcome. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kevin McKinnon, the Deputy Commissioner of Economic Development and Research at DEED. I want to give you a little sense of where we're at after setting up a number of different programs that you're probably interested in hearing from me today about. I will give you that update. But before I do, I just want to touch on some of the other things that are actually going on in our department, which, quite frankly, all of our regular programs that we have were all funded as well. And to back up a little bit of what the commissioner was saying, we are extremely busy through a lot of our existing programs. So our staff obviously continue to process a number of different programs that I've mentioned here on the slide, which is also an indication of what is actually happening in communities and with businesses all across the state. So we've been extremely busy with our programs that we've had in operation for 1, 2, maybe 20 years. And so you can see some of the activity on the slide. I would also mention that there are other parts of the Economic Development and Research Division that will not be really discussed here today, such as our broadband office and the $650 million that we're receiving from the federal government for the BEAD program. We're rolling out a $50 million border-to-border grant program as well, so lots of work happening on the broadband side. As the commissioner mentioned, I also oversee the trade office, which has been extremely busy with their global efforts over the past year, and additionally the research office, which you hear about monthly through jobs reports and other economic analysis that we produce. So staff have been extremely busy, as mentioned. We roughly received about 10 times what we normally receive in a year in biennium, actually. And so we've been extremely busy setting up a variety of new programs. So with that, I'll hop into some of the new programs that we have. The first is the Minnesota Forward Fund. This is a $400 million fund that was created last year to attract business investment, but also to leverage federal funds and be able to respond to opportunities that we have in the business community, very similar to what you might see in some of the other states and how they address business expansion. So there's three components to this forward fund. The first component, the largest, is $250 million for basically the CHIPS Act. It's the CHIPS and Science Act that was passed through Congress. Essentially, we're working with a variety of semiconductor companies in the state. We have a legacy semiconductor industry here that goes back well into the 70s and 80s that is here. So we're working with not only the larger semiconductor fabs themselves, but also a lot of the supply chain on their applications to the federal government. This money that we have will be used to match any awards that are made by the federal CHIPS office. The second allocation is $100 million, and that is very specifically to some Department of Defense projects that were awarded in the Consolidated Appropriations Act. And basically that's to create a bioindustrial manufacturing pilot plant that we are working with BioMade on and or an aerospace research and development testing center, which we are working with a company called Calspan on. And more to come obviously in the future on those programs as well. And then finally, we have $50 million basically to match other business investments that are receiving federal awards. So think Inflation Reduction Act, think Department of Energy loans, et cetera. And so there's $400 million between these three uses. We're working obviously with all of the entities and businesses across the state to not only implement their individual projects, but then also start building some of the ecosystem infrastructure that's needed. That revolves around research and development with the university system. It revolves around workforce development with our higher ed institutions, but also many of our nonprofits and our governor's workforce development board. And finally, what I want to mention is our use of this fund is really directed through MMB. We must request the money from MMB, and MMB then provides it to Deed for use. But one of the reasons that some of this has yet to be deployed is that we require that the federal government make an investment. So we are waiting on the federal government to make some awards, and once they do, we will start rolling out some of these awards. The next program that I want to touch on is the Energy Transition Grant Program. As many of you know, we had a program to support this about 5 years ago. We created a new Energy Transition Office at Deed to work with the 8 to 10 communities across the state. And we have a task force that developed a strategic plan and recommendations. And last session, we were awarded $10 million to build on the efforts that we have in place and to help with grants to a lot of these communities that are impacted. We have obviously started again with our task force. We held our first committee meeting, which I was fortunate enough to attend about 2 weeks ago, maybe, down in Red Wing. And we've also rolled out our grant program to these communities and have made two awards, one to Granite Falls and one to Fergus Falls. We will also be opening the rest of the grant round for the remainder of the fiscal year here very, very soon. We also held a summit and continue to work very closely with the communities, and so very excited about this work and where that's going and looking at future projects for our energy transition communities. Now, a lot of what was passed last year really affects small businesses, and I'm sure many of you are going to be interested in the next number of slides that I have here. The first program that I want to talk about is the Promise Act. This is, sorry, Madam Chair.
Sorry. Commissioner, we have one question before we move away from this slide. Sure. Representative Igo, you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, just before we go to small business, I just want to talk about some of that work there. And I think the energy transition stuff was kind of a segue to what I wanted to talk about. You know, I think the biggest issue that we're seeing, and you've already brought it up a little bit, is the permitting and regulation reform. So I just kind of wanted to dive into that a little bit of what you're seeing from Deed, right? Because when we talk about these energy transition communities, right, we'll use one close to home for me in Cohasset. You know, we worked really closely in my first term with Deed to make a project happen that was going to save that community the tax base, and we lost it for one reason only, and that was permitting and regulation reform. And we have a pretty bad history here the last couple of years now of losing. I mean, I think in my district alone, in projects that have left the area, we're in the billions, multi-billions now, that have left just one small representative district in the state of Minnesota due to permitting and regulation. So I just want to see, you know, is the agency doing any work to kind of be ready to present to the legislature, we're losing these projects because of timeliness, we're losing it because of this, and how we can be better effective? Because, you know, we can talk about $10 million for these communities, but $10 million is even, $10 million is even the tax base that one of these energy facilities provides to the communities that they exist. You know, we need to replace multi-million, multi-billion dollar industries. So just if you could elaborate on that, that would be fantastic.
Deputy Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative Igo. One of the components of our energy transition grant program is that we're really trying to work with the communities and provide them resources actually for planning. And why this becomes important is that we want to make sure that the communities have plans in place that have included stakeholder input, that have included multiple stakeholders in projects, and preparing existing sites for development so that you know ahead of time what issues you might have. So we're really trying to focus in our energy transition community or program and some of the other things that we're doing without funding attached to it to promote the concept of shovel ready. So where in the state can you do these types of activities that basically would be the as close to the most ideal place to host those types of operations. So that's one thing that we're really trying to work with a lot of our communities on. The second is we have run since 2013, and quite frankly, actually, it goes back to 2007 when we started an enterprise assistance program. But what we call right now the Minnesota Business First Stop, and this is all the commissioners, a variety of deputies and program managers, all get together and talk about a variety of projects that come through the system, and obviously many of them start at deed. What we do is try to get ahead of the things that are coming and bring projects to this group so that they can be vetted, so that the groups can actually work with some of our permitting organizations on some of the challenges that they may face after after certainly submitting. So we're trying our best to get ahead of and to educate projects that we see to understand what it's going to take to ultimately get permitted. Where I think a lot of this where you can't control some of this stuff is legal challenges and other things that our regulatory partners are far more familiar with than I am and would be the ones to actually talk about. But we are trying as a group of state agencies, and particularly from an economic development perspective, to be as effective and as efficient as possible for our clients that want to look at our state, but also then to find places where some of these types of activities could occur.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Do you have a follow-up?
Just briefly, yeah. So thank you for that. I think it's a conversation that we need to be bringing everyone to the table on. You know, the Chamber of Commerce is doing some great work. I think that state agencies and us as legislators should really be working on, because I think it's also a unique time when we go back and we look at, like, the CHIPS matching funds, right? Those are time. We have time to get a set amount of time we have to get those done. And if we don't fix our permitting regulation systems where we can get that done in that time, we're going to lose. And the $250 million we put aside for Minnesota to really become a leader on, we're going to lose again. And I guess that's my biggest thing I want to strain on as we go into session right now in economic development, is that we need to start talking about these things, because, you know, we can have small businesses keep emerging and do the, you know, the mom and pops, ones and twosies, but we need pillars of our communities. You know, these large job providers, they're going to be there to provide hundreds of jobs, invest in their communities, and build the relationships that make Minnesota great. But we need to have those pillars, and I just would hate to see, you know, we lose on this CHIPS of, because we can't get a shovel on the ground in 2 years. And then I get to read about in the New York Times how it took 6 months in Mississippi. So I just really want to stress that for the committee and for the agency. I know you guys are aware. So I look forward to the partnership we can create and get those things fixed. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Igo. Lead Kasnick, you have a question?
Yeah, thank you. And Commissioner, you have some very great staff behind you. We always appreciate the Deputy Commissioner. And I don't remember your exact title, but you're
Director of Government Relations.
Government Relations. I wasn't sure if it was that or something else. But, you know, we always appreciate that. And so you got good people. Some of the great programs on the financing that I know are important to communities throughout the entire state. The Job Creation Fund, Investment Fund, the Angel Tax Credit, hopefully we can do more on that. And I was able to have just this fantastic group of young guys just out of college a few years take advantage of the launch program, and I toured. You sent notice that they received a small grant, and they're doing some cool stuff in the medical science. But leading to that is the MedTech 3.0 hub that the area was is participating in nationally. If you could talk about that and what DEED's role may be in assisting and for us as a community to help push that initiative. I think it's interesting. If you have time, Madam Chair, maybe we do that on a different day if you don't want to do it today, but if you could just kind of touch on that and share with the committee and the public what that is and what DEED's anticipated role and how we can partner with our community on that.
All right. I believe that maybe good conversation for another day. I just want to remind people we have session at noon, so we have to make sure that we get out of here at time so we can make it over there at noon. Commissioner, do you want to just try to talk about it as much as you can, and then if we need more conversation on it, we will schedule it for another day?
I think that'd be great.
Madam Chair, happy to. Representative, thank you. And we won't go into detail, but yes, we're deeply engaged in that one. Greater MSP has a lead role along with Medtronic and many others. As you know, we were named one of the first, I think, 31 tech hubs in the country, and ours is one of a small number when it comes to medical technology. That is, of course, a strength for the Minnesota economy. Now we are competing in phase two and continue to be in very close conversation with the leads on that. And as the plan is envisioned, DEED would also have a significant role potentially in being a conduit for some of the federal funds that are available.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Madam Chair, I think that it's just a great opportunity for the state to continue to build on a part of our economy that I think we'd have great bipartisan support on. So I look forward to hearing more about that. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Lead Kostick. And Deputy Commissioner, you might continue talking about small business.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the first program I want to talk about is the Promise Act. As you recall from last year, it's a $125 million program that offers a component will offer grants for working capital to small businesses. But then there is also a component that will offer loans to small businesses, and I will talk about that here in a second. So the first piece of this is about $95 million that will be available to in the metro area, the Neighborhood Development Center, and in Greater Minnesota, the Initiative Foundations. And as the Commissioner mentioned, the Initiative Foundations cover all 80 counties outside of the seven county metro. So we've got seven partners that we are working with to set up the this program. And this program is one that will offer those working capital grants to small businesses. There is a size limit to these companies as to how much money they will get. And so what's been going on right now over the last number of months is we've been working very closely, obviously, with all of our partners. And our partners have been working with their partners on educating, on setting up the program, on doing information sessions in multiple languages, in multiple locations, all across the geographies that are mentioned. Now, I must be very clear, in the metro, there are very specific geographic limitations for this. And in Greater Minnesota, it's the entire areas of the initiative foundations. Similarly, on the loan side, we're working with $30 million that will go to MEDA in the metro. About 24 of that goes to MEDA in the metro, and then about $6 million goes to the initiative foundations in Greater Minnesota. Similarly, we are working very closely with all of our partners on building that pipeline to be able to understand what loans are going to be in the pipeline, and working with businesses on the requirements for these. And so basically over the last 6 months, we have done a lot of work, and our partners have done an extremely good job in organizing and assembling the number of partners that are needed to effectively reach all the businesses that theoretically could ultimately apply to this. We're very excited that the portal for this grant program will open here very quickly. I can't give you an exact date right now, but there's a lot of testing going on to make sure that we can have all the data, retain all the data, make sure that everything looks appropriate, and we can share it amongst various groups that need to be involved. So it's been a monumental effort setting this program up, and we're really excited that this will launch here very soon. I'm also very proud of our partners and our partners' efforts to really get out into the communities to make sure that people understand this opportunity and what's coming in front of them. So I think with that, I'm sure there's probably going to be some questions after. I could probably just proceed and take them at the end.
Yes, go ahead.
Works, Madam Chair. The second program that I want to mention is the Expanding Opportunity Fund. This was a $10 million appropriation to DEED for which we will make basically loans to our nonprofits who are our partner lenders all across the state to give them additional capital to lend to small businesses. This is much like a program-related investment that they might receive from a philanthropy. We will basically be under contract with these nonprofits for 10 to 12 years. And in 10 to 12 years, the nonprofits will be required to pay us that money back. We charge a very small interest rate on our partners to help with our administration of this program over the next 10 years. But essentially, it helps these nonprofits with their balance sheet. It enables them to attract more capital, whether it be from federal resources or where, and allows them to deploy this capital to businesses that they're serving. We have gone through an RFP process. We will be announcing these awards here very soon in March, and again, are very excited to work with a lot of our partners on getting more capital on the street. Our Small Business Assistance Partnership Program. This is actually a long-term program that we've had for many years at DEED, but basically it's funding to provide to our nonprofits to provide business and technical development assistance services. We work with a whole host of partners all across the state to provide those services to small businesses in their region. Many are culturally specific, as you might guess, and particularly here in the metro. And we were awarded, we made awards of $12 million to 41 organizations to assist us in delivering this program. We are very focused on tracking and getting the data on what businesses, how many businesses are being served, how successful are the businesses that have been served. So we're really working with and will be working with over the next couple of years a lot of our nonprofits on putting all of that information together. What I will say is that this is an extremely larger appropriation than we've usually had for this program. And so our nonprofits as well that we're working with obviously have to build up the capacity and add the staff, et cetera, to be able to serve the businesses. So we're working very closely with them to start rolling this program out.
And Madam Chair, would it be appropriate for me to interject here and amplify what the Deputy Commissioner has said? I wanted to acknowledge your point that you made at the beginning about some of the high-level information that I shared, but that we hadn't drilled into some of the inequities that we see across racial groups and other inequities as well. I hope you do now see in the implementation portion of the presentation that our programs are rooted in equity and addressing the fact that that lots of folks have faced higher barriers than others. And so, for example, when we look at the Expanding Opportunity Fund that provides capital to nonprofit lenders to fill in gaps where the commercial banking sector and credit unions aren't able to do all that our businesses need them to do, that's one way that we're trying to get at the issue. Likewise, Small Business Assistance Partnerships, that's a program that is near and dear to me because it's one that I worked on in the past. And that, in many cases, is about providing entrepreneurial training opportunities. Could be in a different language than English if that's a barrier to access. It could be attaching people to mentors that can help them navigate challenging systems and then access what financing they need, whether it's through a bank or a nonprofit lender. And in some cases, those nonprofit partners of ours will offer Islamic acceptable financing for those that don't want to pay interest and instead want to do a profit model. So just to acknowledge that point and state that our efforts across a number of programs are aimed at getting at those inequities.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Now that you elaborated on that, I just want to ask a quick question about the expanding opportunity fund. I remember sometime in December, I can't remember what it was, or November, I called you about the interest rate on this loans. It's prime plus 2 or 3%. Prime at the time, is it 2%? Prime at the time was 8 or 9, and it was 10 or 11%. If we're helping small businesses, 10 or 11% interest rate, in my opinion, is really high for people who can't get traditional, you know, loans from, you know, banks and other places. So I know this is set up way before my time, but I have a problem with that. I really think that we should rethink that model that says we're going to charge people prime plus extra percent because they don't have access to traditional loans. Well, if I could go to Wells Fargo and get a loan with 8 or 9%, why would I want the support of nonprofits that add extra, you know, percentage? So I don't know if somebody want to walk me through the model or the idea behind the prime plus extra percent for people who can't get traditional loans from banks.
Madam Chair, I'll try to walk you through how this actually works. The Wall Street Journal plus 2% is the maximum rate a nonprofit could charge. They don't have to charge that, and many don't, but some do. And traditionally, when you're lending capital, a lot of it is based on risk, and that's essentially, you know, one of the factors that you're making in doing some of these loans. The second factor may be if a business went to Wells Fargo and they needed 50,000, but Wells Fargo only gave them 40,000 at 8%, and they need another 10,000 to finish their project. This, in some ways, can be a gap, irrespective of what the interest rate might be, to get them the capital that they need to ultimately move forward. Is it a question of us as to what the interest rate goes that we tell our nonprofits that they must charge? We would follow what's in the law. And in the law, obviously, it says Wall Street Journal plus 2%. So that is the maximum they can charge. We don't really have any authority to go in and say you can only charge 4%. And remember, a lot of these nonprofits are using these fees and this interest to actually pay for their staff to ultimately administer the loan. Are there ways that we can explore fixing that? I would say yes. There are probably ways that we could look at that, and certainly look at underwriting maybe some of the administration of those loans, and happy to have that discussion.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. I know it's the law, but we're here to sometimes change the laws if they don't work for the people. That's why we have election certificates, but I have a problem with that. And also, you said they don't charge, most of them don't charge more than 10%. I recently heard CDFI is charging up to 36% of interest, which in my head is outrageous. So I really think we need to look at this law and also the way that some of these nonprofits are, you know, working with our communities, because people who can't get traditional loans shouldn't carry the burden of, like, if I can't go to the bank and get a loan, I shouldn't carry extra burden and pay a higher fee than the person who can go to the loan. The whole idea of using this nonprofit is so communities who don't have access can have access. So, and I know this is not you, but it's the way that this whole thing is set up. In my opinion, we gotta go back and look at it, because I have a problem with the prime plus 2% issue. Thank you. You might continue. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to continue a little bit on the small business assistance partnerships with 41 organizations, we cover the entire state, whether that be advance Thief River Falls, whether it be the East Side Neighborhood Development Company, Greater Bemidji, Leech Lake Financial Services, Lower Sioux, MCCD, Ready, Red Wing Ignite. I could list many of these organizations, but they are statewide, and they are very important to us in delivering and actually working with businesses on the ground. The last bullet here talks a little bit about direct appropriations, and of course there were some direct appropriations last year that I do not want to ignore. And the reason is you can see the amount of money, over $30 million that went to 16 or 17 organizations to do basically the same thing. These are a lot of our organizations that we have historically worked with: MEDA, NDC, LEDC, AEDS, ACER. We've got some other folks in there, whether that be Minnesota SBIR, whether it be Enterprise Minnesota, who received money as well, P-Fund, Quorum, Latino Chamber, CETA. So again, I don't want to overlook all these other organizations that aren't necessarily in our Small Business Assistance Partnership Program, but that did receive some technical assistance money for us. This is our ecosystem. This is where your small businesses go for services. These are the people that we employ to provide those services to those businesses. So we're very thrilled to continue to work with a lot of our partners to advance small business in the state. The next slide is just real briefly on a couple of programs. Our Small Business Development Center program, if you recall, there was a $500,000 appropriation last year to help them, our nine regional centers across the state, with some of the federal matching requirements that they have. This program offers no-cost technical assistance through our universities and some of our nonprofit partners across the state. There was obviously over 4,000 businesses served through this program, and this program's been around for many, many years. It is sort of the gold standard of delivering technical assistance. They work with many partners, including here in the metro with MEDA, NDC, etc., to actually provide a lot of those services. So we continue our great work with the SBDC program, and then of course the Launch Minnesota program that was brought up earlier. We continue to help build that ecosystem for startups and entrepreneurs in sort of technology-based and innovation-based industries. We have a grant program, obviously, that works with businesses to help them with some seed capital, but then also provide money to organizations across the state to actually provide that technical assistance. Moving on to childcare, we last year had now record money.
Before you move to childcare, my vice chair has a question.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for this information. With regards to the types of businesses that these loans go to, I think I would like to see a report of like what kinds of businesses we are supporting through this Small Business Partnership Program and the Small Business Development Centers. I also wanted to flag that last year we made critical investments in LGBTQIA businesses, and I don't see that reported here along with some of the other breakdown of clients that were served. So if you could follow up with us and both let us know what types of businesses that Small Business Partnership Loan Program is and grant program is supporting, and also how many of our LGBTQIA businesses were supported, I would appreciate that.
Good, Commissioner.
Madam Chair, we can certainly get you some information on that. What I will say is the Small Business Assistance Partnership Program is not a loan program. It is a technical assistance program. And so it's all about your marketing, how to get financed, how to reach customers, et cetera. The other piece is the loan, so we can give you breakdowns of sort of who gets that. The majority of businesses that will be served through partnerships are retail and service. So it's your Main Street type businesses.
You have a follow-up?
Just a follow-up. I mean, in the state, we are facing a mental health crisis like we've never seen before, and so I'm asking all of our agencies to really give us a breakdown of how are you interacting with these. That's why I want to see the breakdown of what types of businesses these are, because if we're going to adequately address the mental health crisis that every single one of our constituents is asking us about, we need to see how we can maybe start to examine how to flow some of these funds to businesses that are starting therapy clinics or some of those other services, including transportation services for people with disabilities and more. And so that's what I'm trying to get to. Obviously, we're not necessarily going to resolve this session. I'm just saying for future growth and as we continue to do this investment, I'd like to see how DEED and can start to integrate with some of the mental health crisis workforce issues we're seeing.
Mr. Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you. And this happens to be one where I recall from my previous role, my organization was a grantee of this program. And to the Deputy Commissioner's point, use the Small Business Partnership Funds to do training programs for a wide variety of people, some of whom go on to start a business, some of whom say, you know what, now that I learned all this stuff, it's not exactly for me, and we think that's appropriate and still valuable. And sometimes it turns out that 2 or 3 years down the road they start a business. One that did start out of that program is, I believe, called Bridges Healing Center in the St. Cloud area, and it is led by a Somali-American providing mental health services in a culturally tailored way. Which is a big gap and a need. And I think then the organization later was able to make a loan, given that that person had a great business plan that they helped put together through the program. So that's how this can work well. But have we done enough on that? Certainly not. There's a big need yet to go. I also know time is running short, and so I will end there and invite my colleague to continue.
Deputy Commissioner, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Child care. So we had $15 million appropriated to us last year for child care. I'll talk a little bit about the new office that we are setting up, the Office of Child Care Community Partnerships. But prior to that, what I will talk about is a grant round that we run. Basically, we've run a grant program for communities, basically, that can... that are building new capacity, that are investing in the quality of their child care locally. We have a grant program that provides up to $300,000 for communities that are doing child care projects. So we just opened our largest grant round ever with $5 million, I believe, for this year. We'll be accepting proposals here in March and hope to make awards very quickly. In addition to our work with this, we still support our initiative foundations who do this work locally as well in Greater Minnesota. We are very excited about creating our new Office of Community Partnerships. We recently hired a director. Her name is Tammy Wickstrom. She comes from central northeast Minnesota. We are very excited that she has now started. We will be hiring another staff to help with some grants management and outreach, but are really excited about working with a lot of our communities in developing these projects and working with businesses, et cetera, to continue to address this need across our state. Finally, adult use cannabis. As many of you probably recall, we have about $12 million at DEED to be involved in this and to support businesses and workers in this industry. We are actually in the process of seeking information to help us create what these programs will actually look like. First of all, there is a startup loan programming, financing for cannabis businesses, up to $6 million is what we have, and then money for technical assistance to provide would-be business owners how to navigate and create these facilities and participate in the industry across the state. And then there's some training funds that we will also do. We are extremely excited about working with a nonprofit who actually has expertise in this industry and or in training and or in financing this type of activity. So ultimately, we will be looking for nonprofits to help us implement this, and we'll be doing an RFP for nonprofits in the near future. That is my last slide, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner, and thank you, Commissioner Dariel, the team. I know time is not on our side, but I want to encourage people, if you have questions, to follow up with Dariel. Do you have a quick question?
I did, but if we don't have time.
No, we have, I mean, we can do maybe one or two questions, depending on how length they are, but we want to end at 45 so people have time to walk over. You can go ahead, Rep. Feist, ask your question.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. It's more of a shout out than a question, so it'll be quick. I just wanted to thank Assistant Commissioner Abdi Wahab Mohammed with the Office of New Americans for the amazing work that he's doing. And I just wanted to lift that up. The contributions that our immigrant and refugee communities can make to our economy are so critical. I saw some data that we have 45,000 job openings in just the healthcare sector alone. And so it's so important that people who are coming here are able to integrate into our economy and contribute to the greatest extent of their capabilities and their licensure that they might have had in their home country. So I'm just amazed by how proactive this work is, and I'm excited to see what DEED will do with the funding that we gave last session to expand and make permanent that office. Thanks.
Thank you, Rep. Feist. I'm sorry. I should have introduced our assistant commissioner. Do you want to come up and say a word or two, or come on? My apologies for that. It's first day of school, you guys, so just bear with me.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Abdul Wahab Mohammed. I have served in this office since last April, and here to thank the members of the committee and other House members who have supported the creation of an Office of New Americans that will be funded through state funds to focus on integrating new Americans into our economy, solving the you know, job numbers that we're having, and of course into the economic prosperity for the state.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Mohammed, and thank you for the work that you're doing for new Americans throughout the state. I'm sure all of us appreciate that work. I do have questions, but I know where to find you guys. I wanted to ask questions about Promise Act, cannabis, and also accessibility to some of these programs. So I'll have to like schedule another meeting. And I know others have questions, but please feel free to reach out to the commissioner. Deputy Commissioner Dariel is always here with us. Thank you both, Commissioner and Deputy Commissioner, for this presentation. Thank you, Dariel. Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. With no further business, we are adjourned.